This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
The moment of shock is just unforgettable.
From CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's Baby, available now.
Das ist Ihre Millionenchance. Jetzt im Lotto-Jackpot. 20 Millionen Euro. 20 Millionen Euro.
Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Thanks for choosing to listen to Assignment on the documentary podcast from the BBC World Service. I first went to Saudi Arabia in 2014 and have returned over the years, charting the rapid pace of change in the country. I recently attended the Kingdom's International Film Festival in Jeddah, a glamorous event that showcases how much importance the state is putting on the growth of the entertainment industry. On this visit, I noticed that while many Saudis are reveling in newly found freedoms, many people are more hesitant than ever to speak freely, and that away from the glitzy ceremonies, not everything is quite as it seems. I'm on an enormous red carpet. Actresses are walking down in beautiful, sometimes revealing gowns. There are actors from all over the world, film directors, many household names. And they're all heading into the main hall where they'll watch the film festival's opening movie together. We could be at any glamorous spot in the world right now, any film festival, but we are in Saudi Arabia, and this scene would have been unthinkable even 6 years ago in a country where cinema was once illegal. It's a warm winter's evening in the city of Jeddah, the gateway for pilgrims travelling to Mecca. Tonight, Saudi Arabia's ambitions to attract attention to their very own Saudi-wood are on full display.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one and the only, Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Unlike most other international film events, the Red Sea Film Festival has lured major stars to the kingdom by reportedly writing million-dollar checks. Many of the industry's off-screen attendees have told me they're being paid to be here too. The rapid rise of the film industry, supported by generous state investment, has been nothing short of extraordinary. Cultural soft power, including film, is a key pillar of Mohammed bin Salman's Vision 2030. That's the Crown Prince's grand blueprint to diversify Saudi Arabia's economy away from oil and rebrand the kingdom through expanding its cultural reach in sports and entertainment.
Mr. Lee.
Not many Hollywood stars stop for the press on this red carpet, but I managed to grab a word with award-winning actor and director Spike Lee.
I mean, every year this festival's getting more recognition, and I'm honored that I've been asked to be the president of the jury, and today I met the other jury members, and we're looking forward to seeing cinema, you know, meeting and seeing the works of young filmmakers that we do not know about, so we'll know after we see their films, so...
Is there something quite new and exciting here, do you think? Because 6 years ago, this wouldn't have existed.
It's growing.
True.
Growth. And so I'm a supporter of world cinema, too, not just Hollywood. So, and films are the reason why I've been able to travel the world.
Some companies are and celebrities are criticized for working with Saudi Arabia. What do you say to that?
We want to focus on the festival.
I'm going to answer that question. This is my second time here, so I don't listen to what people tell me to do. I'm glad I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. You just heard the voice of someone from a UK PR firm managing the event, advising Spike Lee not to answer that question. But much of the international community is still unsure of the ethics of doing business in Saudi Arabia, a country with a poor record on human rights. The Crown Prince, or MBS as he's known, went to Hollywood in the spring of 2018 to court the industry. he was given a hero's welcome. But by the autumn, he was an international pariah after US-based Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, a critic of the kingdom's government, walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul and was murdered. US intelligence believes MBS ordered the killing. A reporter on the US network Fox News challenged the crown prince on the kingdom's image.
They may be skittish about coming to Saudi Arabia because of what has been written in the past, what they see. What would you tell them?
I will tell them the greatest success story in the 21st century is Saudi Arabia. This is the story of this century. Do you want to miss it or not? That's your call.
I'm Emily Wither, and in this week's assignment, I'm taking a look at the phenomenal rise of the film industry here and the positive impact it's had on people's lives as writers, directors, and actors test new boundaries and break taboos on screen. My first visit to Saudi Arabia, an absolute monarchy, was in 2014. Dressed in the abaya, the flowing black robe and a headscarf, I interviewed women fighting for their right to drive. This time, I'm wearing what I want. And in the years since, I've witnessed remarkable changes in Saudi life, particularly for women. Yet beneath these transformations, the kingdom remains a place where not every story can be told. Wow, what an incredible reaction to the premiere of this film. People are laughing, cheering, clapping. And now that the lights have come up, I can see many people are also in tears. You can really feel this outpouring of emotion from the audience here. It's pretty special to see. I've just finished watching the world premiere of a Saudi film called My Driver and I. It was once seen as far too radical by the authorities. The Saudi director, Ahed Kamel, wasn't able to make the premiere, so she tells me about the inspiration for the film on a video link from her home in Dubai. It follows Selma, a young girl who forms a strong bond with her family's Sudanese driver in Jeddah, a port city on the Red Sea.
Hello and welcome. How are you?
Selma, this is Gamar. Gamar, Selma. This is your new
driver. The film is kind of an homage to him and a love letter. And a love letter to the city, to the place I grew up in. I'm in my 40s now, so I'm very nostalgic for those old days. And now that women can drive, I mean, it's just a very, very different environment.
What was it like to be able to return to your hometown of Jeddah to film it? Did you ever imagine that you'd be able to shoot a movie like that here?
I tried to shoot this film in 2016, actually, and it got shut down before all the changes and everything. And in a way, I'm happy that it did because I didn't have all the resources. So when I came back in 2023 to shoot the film, it was just surreal. It was absolutely surreal. I remember like at one point we were scouting for locations and I saw a police car and like my whole crew just saw me sprinting in the other direction. And they're like, what's wrong? And I'm like, it's the police. And they're like, no, they're here to ask us if we need help. And it was just like such a natural reaction because of all that we lived through.
Some of the scenes shown on screen, the young woman learning to drive, wearing a dress, going to a party to dance with boys. You know, until fairly recently, that would have been impossible to shoot and show here, I imagine. How much has changed here?
Oh my God, night and day. Absolutely night and day. I mean, I was born in 1980, so it was like the beginning of that era where things really shut down and public life was completely curtailed and everything was behind closed doors. And then in the 90s, when I was a teenager, we had all these underground worlds, you know, like anywhere else in the world. So these things exist. And that's what I wanted to capture. Because with Saudi, a lot of people see it so black and white, or they used to see it as so black and white, but it's not behind closed doors. There's an underground world, you know, and I wonder what the underground world looks like right now, to be honest, because I'm sure it's a bit scarier than our days. It was quite innocent for us.
The kingdom banned cinemas just as Ahed was born in the early 1980s. Under pressure from Islamic clerics, as Saudi society embraced a severe form of Islam. But in recent years, the Crown Prince has launched a bold new vision for the country, including reopening cinemas and allowing other public entertainment where men and women can mix freely.
I'm so happy that it's happening, and especially for the coming generations, you know, they don't get to go through what we've been through. Like, I always look at my nieces and like, it's funny when they're like, oh, what are you guys doing this weekend? We're going to go watch a movie. And I'm like, that is so strange to hear, you know?
I've come to visit the local film school in Jeddah to find out how the next generation are making movies. I last visited here in 2018.
Hello.
Hello.
Nice to see you again after all this
time. I'm very happy and very glad to see you again. It's been 6 or 7 years since last time.
Yeah, it's been amazing. 6 years.
Yeah.
Back then, it was Saudi Arabia's only cinema school. It had been given the deceptive title of visual and digital production to help stay under the radar of the religious police and local communities who had opposed the idea of men teaching women how to make films. But now it's known as the Cinematic Art School. Mohammed Ghazala is the chair.
I guess a lot has changed since then.
Many, many. Yani, I believe during your presence here, you will discover that we have more students, including boys, coming to our school. And we will see today a jury coming from Emirates, from Holland, from Egypt, from different countries. And we are really attracting attention from everywhere. And people are really aware of what we are doing.
The jury are here because it's the last day of term and students are showcasing their final projects. At the front of the hall, a final year student has just screened her work. Her film is a personal story, exploring how she navigated change in the kingdom as a teenager. The experts are now giving her feedback.
My name is Al-Anoud Muhammad, and I'm graduating this semester.
How did you feel about the feedback just now?
It was very great. I felt very appreciated at my point of view, because I wasn't sure with all the nationalities that were present, whether the culture of my film was going to be conveyed the way that I lived it. They loved the story, they loved the message, they loved the representation of culture from this new perspective. So it was that period of time where society was going through something new and running towards a change. I was staggering a little bit because I was very confused. I didn't know who I was going to be. And I had to choose that for myself and had to choose my friends and how much of my own morality and self-identity am I like willing to sacrifice or like compromise in order for my friends.
What was it like for you to be able to tell that story in film?
It was so expressive. It was so freeing. I've been wanting to talk about this topic for a very long time because I myself am a hijabi, so I wear the scarf, the headscarf. With that growing time, there were less and less people kind of willing to talk about it because they were more like, oh, don't get us back to those times. We are constricted or whatever. But there's also people like me, like a group of people who don't feel restricted because we weren't taught aggressively. Now that I could tell stories like this and I have a foothold in like the industry, I can talk more about it. I could talk more about other subjects, more about my perspective about things.
From all instructors, starting from this cohort, will they join us?
Freedom of expression has long been an issue here. And during a break in screenings, I asked Mohammed if he thinks young people really do feel they can express themselves on screen.
I believe the Saudi young people are re-exploring themselves. They try to understand more about what is happening. It's very experimental moment. Everyone would come to say, okay, let me make a film about conflict. What about conflict in the family? Conflict between girls. What about the conflict between dad and father? Those were like kind of taboo or talking about the relation with family. There is kind of liberty of communicating, expressing, and people are heard as well. And there is a film festival, more than one, and you can still see something very critical in cinema.
I was on the phone with her, working through contractions.
For CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's baby.
Something was off.
There was somebody out there who's faking pregnancies.
There had been other victims scammed by the same person.
We don't want any other doulas to go through this.
The Con, Caitlin's baby, available now.
Das ist Ihre Millionenchance. Jetzt im Lotto-Jackpot. 20 Millionen Euro. 20 Millionen Euro.
Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
It's amazing the sense of energy and optimism that I felt at the film festival and at this school. Filmmakers, young and old, are understandably excited at the opportunities here. But then I come face to face with a stark example of the duality of the new Saudi Arabia.
I'm back on the red carpet for the premiere of a Saudi film called Lail Nahar. The cast is making its way past the cameras. Everyone's really dressed up, posing for photos. Among them is the director, Abdulaziz Al Muzaini. He's wearing traditional Saudi clothing, joking and laughing for the cameras. It's slightly surreal, though, because he's a dual US citizen and he's currently not allowed to leave the country. That's the cast cheering on the red carpet. Hi, I just wanted to ask, your opening night, how are you feeling?
It's amazing. I mean, I've never been in festivals. I've attended, but I never actually participated. I thought, what's the point? But now I get it. It's amazing. I'm addicted now. I'm going to go and find like a festival pill or something to take. I'm sorry. I'm not the kind of diplomatic answers guy. I always come up with something crazy that, you know, will get me in trouble.
Al Muzaini is in trouble. Last summer, he posted an 18-minute video on social media that came out of the blue.
الفيديو هذا وجهه صاحب السمو الملكي ولي العهد الأمير محمد بن سلمان الله يحفظه.
In it, he looks tired and asks the Crown Prince and the King to help him, saying for years behind closed doors he's been targeted and facing legal proceedings where he says he couldn't defend himself. Within a few hours, the video is deleted and replaced with praise for the kingdom. It was so shocking because Al Muzaini is one of the kingdom's most successful and celebrated content creators. In 2020, he signed a 5-year deal with Netflix to stream his popular cartoon franchise, Masamir.
Being his legal representative, I was entrusted to find a suitable husband for his daughter, Al-Johara.
Cancel all my appointments.
But privately, Saudi authorities had charged him with promoting extremism and supporting terrorism and homosexuality through his Netflix show and old social media posts. He was sentenced to 13 years in jail and handed a 30-year travel ban. Despite the seriousness of the charges, he hasn't spent any time behind bars and was free to talk to me about his new film at the festival.
Emily, yeah?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, hi. Abdulaziz.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
So we can talk in here or go out into the garden?
Yeah, sure. Let's escape. Let's run.
Tell me about your new film.
The new film is a nightmare. It's different. It's chaotic. It's musical. It's comedy. And it has a lot of depth to it in terms of I'm trying to tangle something that never been tangled before, at least so openly, and which is, you know, discrimination against people that they don't think and look like us. For me, Masamir, head-to-head the previous film, I don't like safe zones, safe to say.
You said there about you don't like to stay in the safe zone. Your animated show, Masamir, was compared to the Saudi South Park, a kind of humorous view on a changing kingdom. Would you say you were pushing boundaries back then with that?
We never aimed to push boundaries. It's just the way I write. There are always red lines in every single country. I don't... Not premeditated, where I say, okay, with this movie, I'm going to push the boundaries here. No, it's not that. It's an idea that I love it, I'm going to do it. That's the issue with Saudi film in general, even Arabic films, that they stay in the safe zone. Because if you push it in terms of what people might like and what might accept or might retaliate to, especially in the box office, you are really risking it because either your film will be very loved or very hated.
So you said you want to see Saudi filmmakers pushing it a little bit more. Is it safe for them to do so here?
It is safe. It is safe. I mean, since the dawn of time, there are going to be boundaries. Now, do I recommend people to push boundaries in terms of creativity? Yes. And I hate when I see film, I hate too safe.
You've also had a tough few years. We've heard about the court battles you've been facing. Are all those legal problems behind you now?
It was a hiccup. Saudi... I don't know if I can answer this, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's totally understandable, but presumably your film will be shown at other festivals internationally. Are you going to be able to go and travel to be part of it?
I really cannot answer that for so many reasons. I cannot get into that, to be honest. But the only thing I can say, Saudi officials, and this is why I'm here today, they've been nothing but supportive, extremely supportive.
You might find that answer confusing. How can a man who's been sentenced to 13 years in prison by the Saudi authorities feel extremely supported by those same people? It's perhaps not that difficult to understand when you examine what's really going on here. At a time when the Crown Prince is loosening the restrictions on what people can do, he's severely clamping down on what people can say. Dissent isn't tolerated. And perhaps it's not surprising that Elmuzaini is praising his government to journalists like me. The Saudi government's Center for International Communication didn't respond to a request for comment on Elmuzaini's case, and the US State Department had no comment other than to say our embassies and consulates abroad have no higher priority than the safety and security of US citizens overseas. Netflix declined my request for an interview. Lina El-Hathloul tracks cases like Elmuzaini's inside the kingdom. She's a Saudi lawyer living in exile in Brussels and heads up an organization of Saudi human rights defenders.
People are fearful all the time because it has become a real dictatorship, a real police state, where people can get arrested over tweets, where freedom of expression is non-existent, where all these changes come in a second and then sometimes are withdrawn, so people don't really know what the red lines are. The truth is that Saudi prisons are full of people who have expressed themselves, sometimes even applauded these reforms.
Is Mazzani's situation reflective of a wider crackdown on influencers and creatives?
Unfortunately, yes. I really don't understand why. I mean, these people are Saudi Arabia's pride today. If the Saudi authorities really wanted the Saudi entertainment industry to thrive, they should not be arresting these people. Elmuzaini is one case, and I think, honestly, he is not in prison or he has been protected in a way because he's also a dual U.S. national. Other people who do not have this chance have been arrested and are still in prison. The cases that we've been able to monitor and to document and to confirm their arrests and the charges are really the tip of the iceberg, because we know that if they speak about their arrest or their family speak about someone's arrest, they could also be targeted.
Only those who live outside the country are free to be critical with fewer consequences. Lina tells me that travel bans are effective as they're far subtler than putting someone in jail.
It is becoming a common tactic indeed. And what's very telling or frustrating is the fact that they are unofficial travel bans. You only find out about that travel ban once you try to travel. And I think that it's a very smart and vicious, of course, tactic of the government for repression not to be seen, but for Saudis to really feel it, actually. I feel like people don't understand the dangers of staying silent in face of such repression. Today, people invest because it's easy money, it's fast money. But the fact that we are legitimizing and enabling such a regime without even questioning, you know, the consequences in the long term is dangerous for everyone.
Yet, despite the inherent risks that stories like Elmuzaini's illustrate, there are still plenty of young filmmakers who are keen to tell their stories. But they can face conflict closer to home. Behind closed doors, Saudi families are quietly navigating this cultural revolution as traditions shift and new freedoms reshape lives. Back at the festival, I meet Saudi filmmaker Yam Fida. She's stylishly dressed in a matching two-piece set and has a silver nose ring, which she admits she takes out when meeting her dad. He's very religious and hasn't always accepted her choice of career.
I grew up as a kid loving cameras in general. Me and my sister would shoot music videos. It was actually very difficult. My mother grew up open, so she would ask us to publish them on YouTube. Yeah, on YouTube, it's not even that big of a deal, but it felt to us that we couldn't do that as Saudi girls because it's bad for our family's reputation or so forth. Like, they always used to care about, they don't want girls on screen, or it wasn't a problem for males in Saudi, but it was very difficult for us to publish ourselves out there. Until till this day, if I get an offer to act as cast in some film, I wouldn't be able to take it, not because I wouldn't want to act, but because my family wouldn't support of that. It's not that big of a deal to me because I love being behind the camera and creating the film. So it's fine by me, but that's how it is as a cultural thing in Saudi. It's difficult for a lot of people. I always meet Saudis who want to act, but they're afraid of their families.
She's showing a short film that she wrote and directed at this year's festival.
I wrote that film to speak through that film to my father and show that I still love you, I value you, I respect you, even though we don't have that strong bond, which is kind of what the film is talking about. And ever since I did that, it was the most courageous thing I could say I have done in my life.
Has your dad seen the film? What did he think of it?
He has seen the film, but we do not communicate very well. He had no comment. He watched the film. I personally think that he understood my message from the film, but he did not tell me anything, no feedback, nothing. He just watched the film silently and that's it. But he's proud of me for having it screened here.
While her mum is living the kingdom's changes through her daughter.
Today, as I left the house, my mother was telling me that she sees that I made her dream come true, that I'm going to the red carpet and I have films and all of that. And it was such a sweet moment for me this morning to hear that from her. Because she always loved films and acting, and she still wants to act. So I hope that one day I make her dream come true and she becomes cast in my films. She sees me living this life because she never has when she was in her 20s. But the beautiful thing about it is that I taught her how to relive her youth life. So I have a best friend and a mother now. We're living it together. She's living her 20s and her 40s with me. I took her back in time to the years that she hasn't lived.
About 70% of Saudi Arabia's population is under 30 years old. They were often ignored by the old elites. Mohammed bin Salman's grand vision is also about making them happy and in turn cementing his position. During this trip, I've heard so many positive stories. The social change here is staggering, and Saudis are excited about the future. While the kingdom is no longer viewed as simply a powerful oil state, it's now a host of major sports and entertainment events, and foreign investors and celebrities are lining up to work here. Soft power is working wonders for its young crown prince, who was once shunned after the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. But despite the voices you've heard here, on this visit, I found Saudis more hesitant than ever to speak freely. The kingdom has always been a country of contradictions. Thanks for listening to Assignment, presented and produced by me, Emily Wither, with Ben Carter. The programme was mixed by Neil Churchill, and the editor of the series is Penny Murphy.
I was on the phone with her, working through contractions.
For CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's baby.
Something was off.
There was somebody out there who's faking pregnancies.
There had been other victims scammed by the same person.
We don't want any other doulas to go through this.
The Con, Caitlin's baby. Available now.